If you have a Bible, maybe you could turn, please, to Genesis chapter 13. And I'm going to give you the verses in a few moments. Just while you're finding that, I thought I should perhaps apologize, because normally I stay around at the end and enjoy tea and coffee and such and talk to lots of people. But we're having some fairly extensive building work done at home. Our house is like a building site, and we're not staying there. And I've got some phone calls about some guys I've got to see who want to know answers to all sorts of questions. I'm not even sure I understand the questions. So I'm going to have to fly right at the very end of the meeting. So apologies, but I'll be back tonight. Being away from home has meant we've been staying with our daughter, Abby, and her husband, Aid, and their delightful little daughter, our granddaughter, Evie Rose, who's just coming on 4. And she was telling us a little while ago about something that happened at play school. And it's just a delightful window into the dramas that go on between little people, but also big people. And she came and announced that her best friend, Emily Clifford, had been trying to strangle her. And this must be the difference between men and women, because I thought it was hilarious, and my wife Barbara was very, very concerned. 2 weeks later, she comes and announces that Poppy O'Brien, how's that for a name, another of her friends, had hit her over the head with a frying pan, which I found even funnier. That has everything to do with what we're going to read this morning, unlike most of the things I begin with. Genesis 13 and verse 5. Just to put this in its context, by the way, you remember that we are looking at this mini-series, Moving On to Another Level with God, and we are tracking this archetype of faith, this man called Abraham. And we've noticed in the journey of Abraham that it keeps talking about him going from somewhere to somewhere, and then the little word but, or nevertheless, or however, or now occurs. In other words, everything's going well and suddenly there's a problem comes into his world. And we've been looking at some of the problems and the way he navigates them. Well, here's another problem, Genesis 13 verse 5. Now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. But, there you go, the little word, but the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herdsmen and the herdsmen of Lot. The Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. In other words, they are surrounded by pagans who are watching them to see how they handle a disagreement. So Abram said to Lot, "Let's not have any quarreling between you and me or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left." Lot looked up and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt towards Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out towards the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents near to Sodom. Last time I was with you in May, we began to look at this topic of relational conflict. And we said two things when I was here. First of all, we looked at the scale of relational conflict. And we said that people struggling to get on with people doesn't just happen in play groups. Poppy O'Brien hit me over the head with a frying pan. It actually happens in churches. And we also noticed that it happens between churches. And we also noticed that it happened in the churches of the New Testament. And we worked through some of the dramas that the New Testament epistles talk about. And then in our evening session together, we looked at the significance of relational problems. We said in some ways they are very, very, very important. And how we handle them or don't handle them either moves us on to another level with God or parks us up where we are or more likely sends us backwards. So what we're going to look at this morning is the solution to relational problems. Now, please don't think that I think that this is easy. This is extremely difficult. I understand that. But it is a major part of the Bible. If I am honest, I've been around a long time now. I became a Christian when I was 19. I'm 68 now. When I first became a Christian, I thought that Christians got on with Christians and churches were like an anteroom to heaven and everything was wonderful. And as I've gone on, I have been staggered at what goes on in the name of Jesus in churches. Let me read you something someone wrote. To get good people to do good things is normal. To get bad people to do bad things is normal. But to get good people to do bad things takes religion. And the older I've got, the more convinced I am that that's true. That very, very often, I don't know why, but when we're religious or when we're Christians or when God gets involved, it seems as though courtesy and decency and all kinds of stuff just evaporates, and in the name of God, we can do anything we want. This very, very challenging subject. When I was growing up, one of the most exciting things for me was to join the senior scouts in Lancaster. I loved it. It was actually, it was a time when God was doing lots in my life, and joining the senior scouts took me out of my little world into a much bigger world. And I really enjoyed the excitement and challenge of doing different badges. And one of the badges that I chose to do was a mountaineering badge, because I fancied myself as a mountaineer. In fact, I used to read and devour mountaineering books by Don Willens and Chris Bonington and all these guys who were forging new routes up mountains and rock faces. I used to read the books all the time. And I dreamt about what it would be like to be a mountaineer. One of the things we had to do in the mountaineering badge was to make a piece of equipment. And so I made what I thought was this fantastic rucksack. And my mum taught me how to do back stitching, and I made a frame for it and all sorts of stuff. And part of the mountaineering badge, you had to do some walking in the mountains at night. And so a group of us, I think there were four or five of us, decided to do the Kentmere Horseshoe at night. And we parked up at Kentmere, we set off up this mountain, and we hadn't been going too long, it's dark, we hadn't been going too long, and we got completely lost. And we finished up on a scree slope, just like a big pile of rubble. And you would take a step forward and slide back a step. And it was really, really hard. And then it started to snow. And then the wind started to blow. And then, I kiddeth thee not, my rucksack fell to bits, this thing I'd made. So now I'm dragging the remains of this rucksack up this scree slope. And it's snowing and it's cold and it's horrible. And we got to the top. I don't know where we were, and one of my friends turned and said, have you got the tent? And I said, I ain't got the tent. It wasn't my job to bring a tent. He said, well, who's got a tent? And we're looking round, and there was one guy who had a one-man tent for the four or five of us. And we hunker down in this tent, and it's horrible. And I remember from all the books I'd read, you have to have something hot. So we get this little camping gas thing, and we turn it on, and it goes, and there's no gas in it. And I'm thinking, this is not what I signed up for. This does not feel like I imagined it would feel. And actually, the next morning, we all jacked in. We didn't finish the walk. We went back down the mountain and got in the minibus and drove home. And I wonder how many Christians become Christians and think, I'm signing up for something that is wonderful. It's an anteroom to heaven. Everybody loves one another. It's fantastic. And before too long, something kicks off, and you think, this is not what I signed up for. And some of us think, and I'm out of here. I've had enough of this. So what we're going to look at are some of the principles in Genesis 13 which show us how to handle relational conflict. Because if we don't handle it, I didn't mean solve it, I mean handle it, address it, try and deal with it. If we avoid it or do it badly, we will plateau or we will probably even start going backwards. So just an introductory word before we get into this. If you look at the text, Abraham says to Lot, hey, listen, this is not a great deal. We need to do something about this. You can go right, I'll go left. You can go left, I'll go right. We have to be really careful that we distinguish between the application and the principles. Because you could read those verses and think, whenever there's an argument going on, I am just going to roll over like a little dog on my back, and I'm going to say to whoever is tyrannizing me or whatever, you do whatever you want and I'll just live with the consequences. That is not the principle we're supposed to get from this passage. There are situations where to do that would be absolutely wrong. Let's imagine they're a couple, they're married. And let's imagine the husband is an idiot, just possibly. And let's imagine that this guy is doing drugs and he's drunk and he's wasting all the resources of the family and he's coming home and he's abusing the kids and all the rest of it. In that situation, for a wife to say, hey, you do whatever you want and we'll just live with the consequences, is actually ungodly. So we have to separate what Abraham says from the principles involved in what he says. And I want to suggest there are three really helpful principles. The first thing that hits me is to see the role that Abraham takes. It says in Genesis 13, verse 8, so Abraham said. In other words, Abraham takes the initiative. In that culture, remember that Abraham's dad, Terah, has died. Abraham is the patriarchal head of this group of people. He's the one who should be treated with respect. He's the one who should be treated with dignity and honor. If anybody should be backing off, it's not Abraham. And yet here you have this man not standing on his rights, but going to his nephew to try and sort the problem out. I remember years and years and years ago, I've been into Mac computers since about 1985. And I still get two Mac magazines a month, but in those days I just got one Mac magazine. And on the cover was a little free floppy disk. And on the disk were lots of things, but there were some games. And I remember one of the games on that floppy disk, which many people will have played a variation of it, is called Lemmings. And lemmings are like little people. And you open the game and you have, let's say, 200 lemmings. And these lemmings have got to get around an obstacle course before the clock runs down. And you can invest lemmings with abilities, with powers. You click on an icon and then click on the little lemming. And that's going to help it navigate the obstacle course. Here were three powers that you could give to lemmings. Number one, you could click on this icon at the bottom and you could make a lemming a blocker. So it would simply stand there and it would hold its hands out and it would screw its face up and come. It's a blocker. And it's stopping all the other little lemmings getting past it. Or you could click on another icon and turn a lemming into a bomber. And a bomber would stand there with a ferocious expression on its face and there would be a number clicking down over its head, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then there would be a massive explosion and bits of the lemmings and bits of the scenery would fly all over the place. And then there was a third power that you could give to lemmings. You could click and make one a bridge builder. And the little bridge builder would be walking along until it came to a big gap. And then it would start taking things out of its rucksack, building a bridge across the canyon. And sometimes it wouldn't make it. And it would just turn and come and then dive off the end of the bridge. So you had to get another little bridge builder to come along and complete the task. Let me ask you a question. If you think of people that you don't get on with, would you say your stance is the stance of a bomber, or the stance of a blocker, or the stance of a bridge builder? Abraham is a bridge builder. Not required by his society, but he is seeking to build a bridge of reconciliation and solution to his nephew Lot. And the New Testament is crystal clear. And I think it would be great to have this written across the wall behind a pulpit in every church. Whether you feel the one who's made the mistake, or you feel the one who's had the sin against you, we are required by Jesus to be bridge builders. Matthew 5 verse 23, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, you leave your gift in front of the altar, you go, and you be reconciled to your brother. In other words, I've upset somebody, the responsibility is mine, I've got to get off my bottom and go to them and try and sort the thing out. Now, in case we're thinking, that's got me off the hook, because actually I'm not the bad guy in this, it's them who's done something against me, let me read you another verse from Jesus. Matthew 18:15. If your brother sins against you, you know what many of us say? Well, if my brother sins against me, he's got my address, she's got my email, they know where I live, they've got my phone number, they can just ring me. I hope they read Matthew chapter 5, they've hurt me, and so I'm going to sit here until they get in touch. Well, Jesus doesn't allow that. He says, if your brother sins against you, you go and talk to them. We are always required to be the person who's a bridge builder. And if we say, stuff that, we are saying, okay, I'm not going to be moving on with God. I am going to plateau, or I am going to be going backwards. It is as simple as that. You know, when I go to churches or conferences or different places, sometimes it's like preaching in a refrigerator. And other times it's like preaching in an anteroom of heaven. And I've tried to figure out what's the difference, and it can be a number of things. First of all, if there is beautiful, really well-planned, spiritual worship in song, it's easier to preach than if we've just been down at the old Bull and Bush Christian version of just singing a few old songs or something, and the worship here I love. Or where people are working through relational conflict, that is a great place to be. Where people are not, and people won't sit next to people, and people are not talking, and all that. It is just like pushing a boulder uphill, and the moment you stop pushing the truth, it just comes rolling back down again, and nothing happens. Abraham is a bridge builder. The second thing about Abraham is that Abraham is spiritual, not selfish. Now, I'm not going to look at this for the sake of time. I just want you to notice, maybe you can check this out on your own if you're interested, how many references there are to Abraham walking with the Lord from Genesis 12 on. And then look at Lot, and you will discover that Abraham is walking with the Lord, Lot is just walking with Abraham. And one of the clearest windows into the reality of our walk with God is how we handle or don't handle relational conflict. And here's the third thing. Not only is Abraham a bridge builder, not only is Abraham truly spiritual, but Abraham is very, very, very practical. He has a strategy. He's seeking to do something about it. I know I shared this story with you a long time ago when we were looking at moving from average to awesome. But a long time ago now, I was watching, I don't watch it anymore because it's a bit naff, but I enjoyed it then. I was watching I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And you know that program where they take people and stick them in the forest in Australia, and they're in a little camp, and there's not enough food to go around, and it's not great. And every night somebody does the Bush Tucker trial, and the great, loving, kind, gentle British public vote for who's going to do the particular trial. And we usually vote for the person who it's going to freak them out. Well, I remember watching a program where Martina Navratilova, one of the best female tennis players ever, was in the jungle. And they knew that she was afraid of heights, so we'd voted for her to do this bush tucker trial that involved her doing this scary thing up in the air. They actually had suspended all these mini cars, and on the mini cars they'd fastened big red rosettes. And she has this harness, and she's held from behind, so she can't even see there's a wire supporting her. And she's got to get on a minicar, this is about 50 foot in the air over a lagoon, and climb around the thing and try and get a rosette off. And there's a big timer going down. And after about 30 seconds, boom, there's a fake explosion and the minicar drops into the lagoon. She's not going to go with it, she's fastened, but it's really terrifying. And she's jumping from minicar to minicar. She got every single rosette, even though she's terrified of heights. And when they interviewed her afterwards, they said, how did you manage to do that? And she said, I used a principle that I learned when I was a tennis player. I focused on the solution, not on the problem. I didn't invest all my energy just looking at the problem, and this is wrong and that's wrong and I can't believe and let me tell you and you wouldn't. I actually thought, now, what is the way through this? So Abraham is a bridge builder. Abraham is walking with God, and Abraham is somebody who's seeking a solution to the problem. And so I wanted to end by outlining just some really practical things if there's somebody I've fallen out with, or they've fallen out with me, or we have a disagreement. And please don't think I think this is easy. This stuff scares me to death. I have to do this where I work on a not infrequent basis, and I always dread it. I don't like it. I'm not sleeping. I'm getting headache. My mouth's going dry. So please don't think I'm just saying stuff on a Sunday that I don't try and put into practice the rest of the week. Here are some very simple principles. Number one, give yourself time to figure out what you're going to do. I heard Billy Graham years ago when he was preaching say something that has really served me well. He said, if you are in the middle of a relational conflict with somebody, write them a letter. Sit down and write out, this is what I feel, this is what's happened, I can't believe, just write it out. And then he said, whatever you do, do not send it. Now that might seem a wasted exercise. I found it a very helpful exercise. Just because of the way my brain works, when somebody's upset with me or I'm upset with somebody and it's all kicking off, and if I saw them in the street, I wouldn't know what to do. I mean, do I talk to them? Do I ignore them? I don't know. This is just so awkward. And I'm not sleeping. I'm getting headache and all the rest of it. I have found that sitting down at my computer and writing them a letter and editing it and re-editing it until it is crystal clear, these are the issues, these are the things that we need to talk about, it kind of discharges a lot of my anxiety, and it also clarifies what the issues are in my mind. Don't send the letter, but give yourself time to work through what actually are the issues. Secondly, and this is straight from the teaching of Jesus, I need to be asking the Lord, what may this be pointing to in me? What is this highlighting about me? What stuff is there in me that perhaps needs addressing? You remember the Lord Jesus told the parable of the speck of sawdust and the big log, the big beam. And it's kind of a ridiculous parable. It's a typical Hebraic, stating the point so big that you can't miss it. But he talks about seeing a speck of sawdust in somebody else's eye when there is a huge plank of wood in our own eye. Lord Jesus, is that true for me in this situation of relational conflict? I remember a long, long time ago at home, we were watching the telly. And we just bought a new suite and chairs and stuff. And I'm kind of neurotic about them not getting messed up. And one of our daughters is sitting there, and she's got her right foot on her left knee. She's got her hands behind her head, and she's got a cup of coffee balanced on her right knee. And I can see this going straight over the new couch. And so I said, hey, that, please don't sit like that. Be a bit more careful. And she didn't say anything. She just looked at me, and I'm thinking, what is the problem now? She's looking at me, and then I looked at me, and I'm not joking. I have got my right foot on my left knee, and I have got a cup of tea balanced on my knee. Here's me issuing stuff to other people, and they're looking back and seeing exactly the same thing in me. Lord, I'm going to give myself time. I'm really going to ask you, and maybe ask people who love me, what might I be bringing to this that isn't very helpful? Thirdly, Lord Jesus, help me to see that this might be pain in that person's life. People respond, people react, people have opinions because of their history. And a wise person once said, what looks like a stain may actually be a scar when you get up close. I remember a man telling a story about being on the underground, and he was sitting waiting for the train to come in, and there was a man came down the stairs with two kids, and these kids are so unruly. The man sitting on the bench was getting really upset. They're charging around, they're making a noise, and he's thinking, why doesn't he control those kids? Train comes, doors open, he thinks, great. And he goes to the furthest carriage away from this guy and his two children. Only to his horror to find that when the train sets off, these kids have tracked him and now they're in the same carriage and they're running around and they're just annoying everybody. And he stands it for a while and then he goes to the dad and says, can you please control these children? And he said, the man looked at him like he was coming back from a distant place. He said, excuse me? He said, can you look after these kids? And the man looked, he said, I'm really sorry. And then he said, my wife just died. I'm sorry. What looks like a stain may actually be a scar. Lord Jesus, would you help me to have your compassion, your kindness, your understanding for this really awkward, difficult, angular person that I'm trying to deal with. Give myself time to identify the issues. Ask the Lord to show me if there's stuff inside of me. Ask the Lord to show me if there's stuff inside of them. But how about if I do need to go and talk to them? Well, I just jotted some things down, and with this we're through. Just bang, 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 bang. Number one, choose a sensitive time. Ask yourself, when would be a good time to see this person? Not just for me, but for them. Choose a sensible place. I can invite them around to our house. Well, maybe your house is not a great place for them. Maybe your house is where you feel safe, they feel threatened. Maybe the office is not a great place. I'll tell you where I like to talk to people when it's difficult. I like to just go for a simple walk. Because when you're walking, you're close to somebody, but you're not eyeballing them. It's not, oh, I don't know where to look. Do I look at them? You know, you can kind of just gaze around but still be talking. Explain as clearly as you can, this is how I feel. Keep saying, this is how I feel. Not you are an idiot. Not you never listen to anybody. Not you can't see anybody else's point but your own. Just say, this is how I feel. How you feel is legitimate. It may be coming out of some stuff in you, but this is how I feel. And then say, how can we work this out? To use the word we, use the word our, to use the word us is extremely helpful. And the final thing I wanted to say, it might not work. It might not work. Here's my experience. At least 50% of the time when I work through this, nothing is solved at all. So why bother? One final story from a long time ago in my life. One day I'm sitting at home I'm the pastor of a church, and there's a young woman who's come to see me who's getting married or thinking of getting married, and we're talking. And partway through the conversation, on the door, and I go, and it's raining, and there are two guys stood there who I knew somewhat. One of them's a bricklayer, and the other is the guy who mixes the cement and carries the hod frame. And they've been rained off on a nearby building site. And because pastors only work on a Sunday, as far as they're concerned, they've come round, and without even asking, boom, they just walk into our house for a cup of tea. Park themselves, and the guy is the uncle of the woman who was talking to me. And he says, "What's Anne doing here?" I said, "Oh, she's thinking about getting married." He says, "What?" I said, "She's thinking about getting married." He said, "And you're encouraging her?" I said, "Well, no, I'm not exactly encouraging her. I'm just listening and talking to her." And then he launched into the horrors of being married, because he'd just got divorced, and it had all been messy and stuff. And I'm listening to this and thinking, "Oh my, this is tough." And then he looked at me and he said, "Why would anybody ever get married?" And having listened to his thing, I'm thinking, "Well, I don't really know, you know." And my mouth kind of bypassed my brain, and I said to him, "Les, getting married is a really great opportunity to grow up." Why bother with all this stuff? Why bother about Evie Rose, who's 3.5 years old, trying to work out why Emily Clifford is trying to strangle her? Or her best friend Poppy O'Brien's hit her over the head with a frying pan. I mean, why bother looking at that stuff? It's actually how we grow up. Now, what we're going to look at tonight is, Rob, all that sounded really nice, but the thing I'm involved in is so hostile and so messy, you don't have a sweet clue what it's like. So tonight we're going to go a bit deeper and look at the same issue, but explore a bit more in depth.